I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for Shape Up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Lester Spence, an assistant professor of political science. I may jump in once or twice, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, hey, hey.
Good, man. Doing good.
What's up?
Well, yo, check this out, man. These are heady days. All jokes aside, Senator Barack Obama has secured the Democratic nomination for president, making him the first African-American in history to win a nomination like this from a major party. Ruben, the R, welcome back, bro.
Hey,
listen, Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa endorses Obama. So what does this mean for the Latino community with Barack stepping up?
You know, not much in terms of Villaraigosa. As a person endorsing somebody, I think Barack Obama is going to do very well with the Latino community in November for a very simple reason. Latinos are notoriously brand loyal. John McCain is going to do better than your average Republican for sure. But I think that Barack Obama is going to benefit from a lot of Latinos coming home to the Democratic Party. This is a huge moment for our country and for African Americans. It's something you just have to sit back and reflect on. I mean, we should all be very proud of what's transpired. But clearly, you know, there's still questions. I know we'll talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton, but there are questions about what she wants and where we go from here.
Right. A-Train, now you're on record as an Obama supporter. You know, I wrote a piece for TV1 Online. And, you know, I said it's all well and good if my man gets nominated. But here's the rub. Can a black man really be elected to president in this country? A-Train.
Yes, and he will be. And I think what's important to keep in mind from the speeches on Tuesday, if I had to sum up the speeches in one word each for each candidate, for Obama, it would be magnanimous. And for Hillary, it would be redunculous. I'm shocked by this, by the way. She literally had a chance at her own Shawshank Redemption. This was her opportunity to unite the party. And she, unfortunately... she screwed the political pooch we have to understand, professional politics is like the NBA playoffs. Win or go home. Once you cross the finish line, once you win the checkered flag, once the buzzer sounds, that's game. And for somebody to come after they've mathematically been eliminated and lost the game, instead of gracefully bowing out saying that, you know what, we're going to be a unified party, she had her little Cry Me a River show in New York.
I'm also wondering about something that... back when he was party chairman, that Terry McAuliffe said to me about Carol Moseley Braun, who was running. She was a former senator from Illinois, and she was in the race. A lot of people didn't take her seriously. And I said to McAuliffe at one point, I said,
Especially Terry.
And I said, look, are you asking people to get out at this point, clear the field? And he said, no, because I'm hearing from a lot of women in the party, and they like seeing her in the field. And I'm wondering if, after a certain point, your own personal ambitions aside, do you become the embodiment of other people's hopes, dreams, and feelings? And so is part of what this is about is Senator Clinton trying to sort of fulfill the role that became metaphoric as much as it was personal, and you're staying in there as a way to kind of let your supporters deal with themselves. Ruben, what do you think?
Yeah, Ruben, get that.
I think the point you make is a good one. There are a lot of women out there, particularly a lot of older women, like my mother, who were seriously heavy for Hillary Clinton and feel heartbroken right now. And it's going to be real hard, I think, to get them to go to the polls and vote for Obama in November. He's going to have to do right by them. I think one way he might do right by them is with his vice presidential pick. He may pick a woman that would change the equation. But I think it's important to realize that for older women in particular, the Hillary Clinton candidacy was huge, and it's not something they're going to let go of easily.
You know, Ari, you make some great points. I think there are a number of women on Obama's short list. L. Spence, am I correct on that?
Yeah, there's Governor Kathleen Sebelius out of Kansas, but that's it. If you want to include Hillary Clinton, you say there are two. There's two.
Lester, can I just ask you, what about Hillary Clinton as vice president? That's kind of all the buzz this week. Good idea, bad idea? Is she an asset or not?
No, I don't think she's an asset, and I think she pretty much took herself out the running with the speech she gave. I think that there was a way that she could both speak to the women who really, really, really wanted to see her win, and that at the same time extend an olive branch to other members of the party, and she wasn't able to do that successfully. So I wouldn't be surprised if she had if she weren't given some type of veto power. But I think her, as far as I'm concerned, like I mean something, but as far as I'm concerned, I think the only woman on the list now is Kathleen Sebelius.
I'm also wondering if, and I'm wondering what you guys think about this, is in a way, has she overplayed her hand? Because this constant demanding or essentially sort of positioning yourself to be vice president, I wonder, does it not make him look weak? Then it becomes a test of leadership.
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. She's absolutely overplayed her hand, and she's playing into the role that people kind of look at her like, you know, she's trying to debo her way into this position. It's not like this vice president is like, you know, the silver medal. I mean, it's a whole other different position. You are subservient to the man, you know, the man being the president. So, I mean, I can't even see her playing second fiddle.
Let's face it. I mean, the rule of the street is you don't negotiate with the winner.
Wait a minute. Life is not about what you deserve; it's about what you can get. Right.
Right. But if you're then don't talk about unity. Don't play both sides of the coin here. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
This gets back to our conversation a few weeks ago about people were saying, "Oh, you're being sexist against Hillary and this, that, and the third." I was like, wait a second, you can't be, you know, Mr. Demure 1 second, then Debo the other. You got to make up your mind. If you're going to play by the rules of the playground, play by the rules.
I think it would be really different if her case that she was going to try to make would be substantive on policy issues. But it isn't, you know, so it's not about, well, I'm really fighting for health care and he's really, really wrong on health care. And if you're going to make this move on health care towards my position, then I'll give you these votes. It really appears to be more about something else. And given that she wasn't really, she didn't have any stereotypical women's issues on her platform when she started. I mean, she was for the war. She didn't say anything about poverty. It does look, it really looks really suspicious, particularly when you juxtapose that against how Jesse Jackson was treated.
Well, here's what's important. Forget for a second the Tuesday night speech, the concession speech, all that. Forget that for a second. What was really important was the speech on Wednesday, the next day at AIPAC, American-Israeli Political Action Committee. The significance of that is that I, listening very closely to Barack Obama's speech to the group and then followed up by Hillary Clinton's speech to the group, I would have thought Hillary would have come forward and sang Barack's praises to that group. Instead, she actually continued on the campaign, and she drew a line of differentiation between herself and Barack Obama over whether or not we should negotiate with Hamas. Mm-hmm. How can you campaign for vice president if you're undermining the president?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News, and we're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Lester Spence, and Arsalan Iftikhar. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. It's deep to me that, you know, the Associated Press is reporting that Hillary Clinton, she's going to officially throw her support behind Obama tomorrow. And after she's badmouthed him, how do you do that? I mean, after you diss somebody the way that she's dissed him, Doc, stop in here, man.
The answer is you can't do it. So the question is whether she's just got an issue where she just can't stop or whether she really does have another type of strategy. I mean, so I would be thinking, and this is kind of gangster, but if I were Obama, I would be thinking like, okay, if we lose this election and we basically hamstring the Clintons from the Democratic Party, will that be a long-term victory? That's how I'd be thinking.
No, if he loses the election, she's going to be right back up in front in 2012.
Yeah, that's what she's waiting for.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. If the only way to keep her and Bill Clinton out of the White House is for him to win twice. Win again, and then win again in 4 years. Yeah. You know, but other than that, she's going to be Johnny on the spot, forgive the expression, right out to 2012.
Ruben, can I ask this question? Because there's been so much talk this week about healing the Democratic Party and kind of bringing these constituencies together that have been fractured by the primary campaign, which, you know, turned increasingly bitter. But the fact is she also has very high negatives. And so the part that I'm curious about is, how do the pros and cons play out in the arithmetic? I mean, does the pro of bringing the people who say, if she's not the nominee, I'm not voting for the ticket, you weigh that against people who don't dig her and don't dig her husband and feel like they don't want more of this baggage.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just wonder, I guess what I'm hearing is I'm hearing one side of the equation, but I'm not hearing the other side of the equation. And I wonder how it balances out.
I think this. I think that there's two kinds of voters in November, and it's not the typical kind of groups you think about. It's the people who always vote, who are conditioned to vote. And then there's the Obama voters that typically, this is their first election. He brought in new voters. Those are the two camps. Keep in mind, Republican and Democrat, they fall into either of those camps. And so what you do is if you bring Hillary onto the ticket, you end up undermining camp number two, where people begin to look at him and say, wait a minute, I thought this guy was new and different. I'm not so excited about him anymore. So Barack Obama would be kidding himself if he thinks there's not a price to be paid for bringing Hillary on board. there is a negative that goes along with that. I think he knows that. I think it's one of the reasons Michelle Obama has nixed this idea and vetoed it. The rumor is she doesn't want Hillary or Bill anywhere near the deal. I think they realize that you can't be the candidate of change standing on a podium next to the Clintons.
That's right. And that's why he should pick John Edwards as his running mate.
John Edwards.
Oh, no. Yes. That would be super dope. Yes.
John Edwards?
Yes. I said it.
The white boys.
I'd rather see SpongeBob SquarePants.
I said it.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Forget him.
John Edwards. That's my man.
He's never been a governor. He's never run anything. No foreign policy.
He ran for vice president. That's what he does. That's his job.
He has national gravitas.
Unsuccessfully.
Chris Dodd? How about Chris Dodd?
I predicted Celtics Lakers in the finals, and I'm predicting
John. He had to go there.
Lester, Doc, what is up with your boy, billionaire investor, cable type guy, Bob Johnson, lobbying the Congressional Black Caucus to move and put Clinton on the ticket? He's trying to Debo up on the CBC, man. What's up with that?
You know, there's a list of black congressional CBC guys who supported Clinton, and a number of them have strong competitors. It'll be really interesting to see how many of them get taken out. But going to Bob Johnson, when's the last time you asked your cable guy for political advice?
Right. Exactly.
Bob Johnson has shown in this campaign that old axiom about how you can have money but not have class.
Yeah,
that's a good point. An African-American billionaire out there who does have class is Oprah Winfrey, and she conducted herself throughout the campaign as a Barack Obama supporter with a monicum of class, okay? But when Bob Johnson went before that audience and alluded to Barack Obama's drug use, that whole ugly scene, and, you know, I mean, Bob Johnson is beholden to the Clintons. We got that, okay? But this idea that somehow he speaks for Black America or has any influence over Black America— just because he fleeced Black America to make all his money doesn't really give him influence.
Right. You know, and he's on that Clinton tip where he's trying to flip-flop. I mean, one minute you're dissing him, next minute you're like, you know, get down with him.
Yeah, he's the broker. He's the
broker.
Hold on, everybody.
A-Train is the resident Obama supporter. What's up with that, man? I think you all need to tell Johnson to fall back.
Well, let's not forget, first and foremost, that Bob Johnson got Hillary Clinton's blessing to do this. It's on record. They said that he got her blessing after she lost.
Wow.
What kind of message?
Oh, Bob, could you talk to the black folks
exactly,
for me,
please? Exactly. Yeah. Right. After you. No. And it's like LeBron losing to the Celtics in Game 7 and then being, you know, going and lobbying afterwards. It's like the game's over and you're going to send one of your foot soldiers to go lobby on your behalf. Let's
you know what?
A-Train,
it's nothing like that. It's like, you know, you mess up with somebody black and then you get one of your black friends to go try to smooth it over. That's what it is.
That's a good point.
Let's just call it what it is, bro. All right.
Jimmy, if I get in trouble, will you smooth it over for me?
We'll all smooth it over.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Remember, Michelle, if you get in trouble with a Latino group, say habla español. Don't call me.
Don't call me.
That's trifling.
Oh, dang. It's nice to know.
Oh,
who's got
man.
My back?
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
Can I just ask, get the guy opinion?
Eminem.
Remember on Tuesday night when it came time for Senator Obama to give his speech and he and Michelle Obama walked out and they did
the dap.
The little moments. It's just like Obama brushing his shoulder off.
What'd you
like,
think?
Yeah, that's hip hop.
It was the dap heard around the world. And you know, you know, as she's dapping him, you know she's saying, go get him, baby boy.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and, you know, it's just like Obama, boombaye. It's time to, you know, it's a Super Bowl now.
That was probably the scariest
moment. Arslan has drunk the Kool-Aid.
I think that might have been the scariest moment in white mainstream television for white America to look at these.
They really are black.
Right. They're so much blacker than we thought that they were. Now you got this husband-wife team giving each other dap. It's like, we in there now. It's like, oh, snap. You know, Archie Bunker is in his easy chair spitting out his beer like, eat it.
Stop. Lester, as our resident academic, will you describe dap for those who are not familiar with the term?
Dap is the cultural ritual by which two people, normally of African descent, exchange brotherhood or familyhood by touching their fists gently against one another.
Thank you, sir.
Bumping fists.
Well done. Anyway, I thought it was cute. I'm the resident girl. I can say I thought it was cute. I have one more thing that I wanted to ask you all about, if I may.
Sure.
Yep.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago when I asked you all why we never talk about hockey?
Indeed.
Right.
You all laughed at me. Mm-hmm. You did.
I watched hockey.
Okay, well, here it is.
I watch hockey.
I asked a friend of mine, Bill Douglas, who is a White House correspondent for the McClatchy Papers. I shared my pain with him, and this is what he said.
I was at my local barbershop recently, listening to the furious debates about Kobe, King James, not-so-tiny Tim Duncan, and the other stars in the NBA playoffs, when my barber, with a sly smile on his face, asked me, "How's that Ovechkin dude doing?" The other customers stopped talking, lowered their ebonies and jets, and turned to me as if I were about to speak a foreign language, the language of hockey. "The Flyers shut him down pretty good," I said. My barber nodded, but the other customers looked at me as if I had just landed from another world. Can I just tell you, it's not easy being a black hockey fan.
Don't you feel bad now?
I am a black hockey fan.
Give hockey some love, please.
As a sports junkie, I will give hockey
Thank
love.
Thank you.
Just like I would give golf love.
There's nothing better than playoff hockey.
Lester, break it down.
Nothing better. I watched that game. Detroit's about to win the Stanley Cup. They tie it with 30 seconds left in the game. It goes three other overtimes. You can't create a circumstance like that in any other sport. It happens in hockey with regularity. I love it.
It's gangster. All right.
Gentlemen, with that, I think that's going to be a wrap. I want to thank you so much. But showed up to the shop. I got to pass it back to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
Thank you. Yes, Jimmy ma'am. Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV1 Online. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from KOGO in San Diego. Dr. Lester Spence is assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from member station WEAA in Baltimore. And Arsalan Iftikhar, a civil rights attorney and contributing editor for Islamica magazine, joined us in our Washington studio. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Monica Evstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Irva Gunja, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Wendy Johnson, Jennifer Longmire, Beneva Schulte, and Jack Zahora. Our summer intern is Kristen Lee. Our planning editor is Alicia Montgomery. Our line editor is Lori Grant. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Ivan Burketh. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. The executive producer is Marie Nelson. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.